Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, your RV, camper, your parents' basement, loft, taxi, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, and good evening, good morning. I'm Richard Serrett, and my voice is being beamed to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate talk radio, AM 640, via Coast to Coast World Headquarters in Sherman Oaks, California. Funny thing, the last few days I've had this earworm, courtesy of the great Christian apologist C.S. Lewis, stuck in my head. Wrong will be right when Aslan comes in sight. At the sound of his roar, sorrows will be no more. When he bares his teeth, winter meets its death. And when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again. It's from the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, of course, the Narnia Chronicles, which remains a huge favorite with my twin boys. Maybe with you and yours as well. It probably, that earworm I just mentioned, has a lot to do, or everything to do, with my guest in the last half of this transmission. I don't know if you feel the way I feel when I look at the headlines these days, and things, both domestically and geopolitically, are so fluid. I feel like the ground is shifting beneath my feet. It's frightening and it's exhilarating at the same time. Tectonic forces are at play. The news is moving so fast I can hardly keep up. WikiLeaks revelations, efforts behind closed doors to silence Julian Assange, alleged Russian skullduggery and cyber attacks, Russian naval vessels moving through the English Channel en route to Syria, the rise of a character like Donald Trump onto the political stage, and for those of you familiar with the prophecy of King Cyrus in the book of Isaiah and the fulfillment of that prophecy in the book of Daniel, some 150 years later, you'll know what I mean. The rapidity of technological advances, facial recognition technology, eye scans, implanted chips, and advances in AI and robotics and bioengineering and geoengineering. Well, I find it frightening. And lately, you're hearing this term tossed around a lot when describing the events playing out. Oh, it's biblical. The Russian presence in the Fertile Crescent, that's biblical. The rise of ISIS and the concern they could use the great migrant crisis as a Trojan horse to bring down America. Well, that's just biblical. Is it? Are today's headlines a fulfillment of biblical prophecy? Carl Gallups returns to Coast in the later stages, when it really will be later than we think. Carl has a brand new book out titled When the Lion Roars, Understanding the Implications of Ancient Prophecies for Our Time. And that will take care of hours 3 and 4 quite nicely. Please stick around for that. I find it absolutely fascinating that so much of what gets discussed here on Coast to Coast AM, certain buzzwords and phrases, seems to be percolating up from this subterranean lair and finding its way onto the lips of mainstream commentators, mainstream news networks, the front pages of newspapers. It's even being hurled around like bundles of soiled laundry in the current presidential debate. Never before have we seen a U.S. presidential election like this one. So much intrigue, subterfuge, dirty tricks, smears, accusations. It's the stuff Hollywood blockbusters are made of, or a David Baldacci novel, come to life. We've heard the word conspiracy come up time and time again. Trump has used it countless times and aimed it at his political foes, both Democrat and Republican. He's hurled it at the mainstream media and in certain news outlets in particular. How do you answer to your accusers, Mr. Trump? The New York Times is conspiring against me, he responds. Hillary Clinton uses it in the pejorative, in a more dismissive way as she bats away Trump's accusations of dirty tricks and collusion with the State Department, the Justice Department, the White House, and, of course, the media, all alleged. How do you respond to the Project Veritas video, Secretary Clinton? That's just a conspiracy theory. Of course, during the Clinton presidency, she accused her husband's political opponents of a vast right-wing conspiracy. Conspiracy theory is used continuously by mainstream media, in particular, as a bludgeon to stifle debate. Why don't you recognize the Bank of Canada Act, Prime Minister Trudeau, instead of borrowing from international bankers? That's just a silly conspiracy theory, he responded. That's on YouTube. You can check it out. Everyone is using that term, again, to prevent important discourse. It's become a convenient and all too easy method of disengaging from an uncomfortable conversation, or in some cases, a very uncomfortable fact. It's become an all too easy excuse for the fourth estate not to do its job. That might explain in part why the most recent polling suggests about 95% of us no longer trust mainstream news organizations. Perhaps because we perceive they're not willing or able to tell us the truth, and that they hide behind the term conspiracy theory in order to continue to pull the world over our eyes and blind us to the truth, to quote Morpheus from The Matrix. The fact is, conspiracies are real. Not all of them, but some of them. Enough of them. A conspiracy is at times, a crime, not just a theory, as Jim Mars likes to say. Thousands, perhaps tens of thousands, of criminal conspiracy charges are laid every year in the United States. When CEOs and board members conspire to fix prices, that's a conspiracy. In the sporting world, when team owners work together to avoid competitive bidding for a player or a player's services, that's called collusion. But those owners first had to meet behind closed doors and plan and plot. That's conspiracy. So what am I on about? I'm saying it's time we take back the term conspiracy and give it its rightful place in public discourse. People conspire. Corporations conspire. Government agencies have been known on occasion to conspire. Perhaps even political party operatives and media executives conspire. They have to be examined thoroughly on a case-by-case basis, and some of them deserve to be investigated. Conspiracy theories, that is. And in the first 2 hours of Coast to Coast, we'll dive deep into conspiracy with assassination researcher and author Don Jeffries. We're taking the word back tonight, this morning, and giving it the time and respect it deserves. So, come on in. Hang your cloak on a hook, weary traveler. Grab a stool and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serra. This is Coast to Coast AM, a radio program of the people, by the people, for the people. Why don't you stay a while? In his book, Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, there's that word again, and cover-ups in American politics, Don Jeffries writes that the U.S. government has spent as much time covering up conspiracies as it has helping the American people. In Hidden History, he reveals the amount of effort that the U.S. government has dedicated over the past 50 years to lying and covering up the truth to the world. Starting with the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, Don chronicles a wide variety of issues that have plagued the U.S. History, whether it's the assassination of MLK, RFK, Iran-Contra, the Oklahoma City bombing, TWA Flight 800, voting fraud, or 9/11. Every major disaster or war that we've witnessed has somehow been distorted by those who are supposed to be protecting us. Donald Jeffries has been researching the JFK assassination since the mid-1970s, when he was a teenage volunteer for Mark Lane's Citizens Committee of Inquiry. He's very active on all the JFK assassination forums and has been a moderator on the London Spartacus Education Forum for several years. His first published book, the acclaimed 2007 novel The Unreals, has been compared to Alice in Wonderland and The Wizard of Oz. Hidden History is his first nonfiction book. Don Jeffries, welcome aboard to Coast AM once again. How are you?
Fine, thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. We last spoke, just over a year ago, and much has changed in that time. Things are changing at breakneck speed. First, I want to point out, it's interesting to note that you have the foreword in your book, or for your book, was written by Roger Stone, who's a very interesting individual. People will know Roger as a longtime friend and advisor to Donald Trump.
That's correct. That's right. The new paperback edition has a foreword by Roger Stone.
All right. The word conspiracy. Let's look at that in light of what's been going on during this surreal U.S. presidential cycle. Do you think the word, as being used by Donald Trump, for example, is being applied in an appropriate manner?
Well, I've written a lot on my blog about Donald Trump. As you said earlier, he's certainly an interesting character to emerge upon the stage. Totally unexpected, too. I never thought Donald Trump had these kind of beliefs behind the scenes. But Roger Stone had told me a while back that this is just the tip of the iceberg. That behind closed doors, he apparently is quite the conspiracy theorist, as someone would say. I think in a better, he's opened a lot of eyes, I think. And I think if he were just a better candidate, he's not a very good candidate. I think most people would admit that. But he's really opened up the political dialogue by talking about issues. And actually, for once, and I think that's why this has been such a contentious campaign and an interesting campaign, because instead of getting a typical, what I call Republicrat opposing him, a Romney type or Jeb Bush, who they clearly wanted, Paul Ryan, someone like that, they get this loose cannon billionaire who's like Ross Perot on steroids. And so it really invigorates the campaign, and people finally see a difference between the candidates. And they may not like the personalities of either one of them. Donald Trump has a very, I guess, bothersome personality to most people, and he annoys me a lot of times too, just with what he says and the way he says it. But he is talking about issues that no other political candidate has talked about from one of the major political parties in my lifetime. I mean, he's basically taking on the entire system and saying it's corrupt. He's talking about draining the swamp. And, you know, these are revolutionary type sentiments, and certainly the entire establishment is lined up against him. And I've said over and over again, his most attractive quality is the fact that that entire establishment appears to be violently opposed to him.
Is there anything dangerous? Critics have suggested that, for example, during the final moments of the third debate, when he was asked, are you going to acknowledge, if you lose this election, will you acknowledge that this was a fair and open election? Will you, you know, agree to a peaceful transition? And he said, well, I'm going to wait and see. And it was suggested by many in the mainstream media that that was undermining faith in the democratic process, and that that was a very, very reckless and dangerous thing for him to do. What are your thoughts on that, Don?
Well, actually, I thought that was the best moment of the debate. I applauded it, because the process should be questioned. If we don't know at this point, especially after the primary season just went through, I mean, we have WikiLeaks documents documenting that the Democratic National Committee set out to conspire, using that word, to keep Bernie Sanders from getting the nomination. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, they were declaring Hillary Clinton the winner when the votes were still being counted in California. They may still be being counted, as far as I know. This, the people finally saw, because Sanders invigorated so many people, and that's why you not only had Trump, but you had Sanders, obviously. Both of these candidates tapping into what I think is an innate sense of populism out there in the public, and they each tapped into different parts of it, different aspects of it. If they ever came together, boy, that would be an overwhelming movement that no one could stop. But they were very disillusioned Sanders supporters when he was not only screwed out of the nomination, but then he completely rolled over and played dead. And unlike Trump, I said Trump protested him being screwed over more than he did. I mean, he basically whimpered, went away with his tail between his legs, and instantly endorsed Hillary. And I think that really opened people's eyes again. Not only the fact that the process was unfair with the super delegates and everything, and the fact that he was drawing 30,000 people to every one of his rallies, and Hillary couldn't fill a room, still can't fill a room, while Donald Trump, again, draws those 30,000 people to the rally. So people, I think, are open to the entire process. So at this point, when Donald Trump says he's not going to, he may have to look at it, depending on the election results, because I think he knows his internal polling is obviously quite different than what these mainstream media polls are showing over and over again. And the most obvious signs of a candidate's support are signs on yards, bumper stickers, and people that attend the rallies. And Hillary Clinton has had to cancel several campaign events because no one was there. At other events, literally, she had a handful of people there. Donald Trump talks to packed crowds wherever he goes. So just the eye test, and the reason there aren't more Trump signs is because there's been such violence of it. I mean, people have torn them down. In one case, they set fire to a sign and the house burned. And again, the media just kind of turned
right.
Back.
You know, and the media, when critics have looked at the polls and said, well, what about the enthusiasm? Or they've also raised, the critics of these polls have raised the specter of this social acceptance bias. In other words, people, when they answer the phone, will not admit to that they're going to vote for Donald Trump. They downplay that. They say there's no evidence. But I mean, an absence of evidence isn't evidence of an absence. I mean, I don't know how you measure that, how you gauge until, you know, the ballots are actually cast, like in Brexit, how you are able, how a pollster is accurately or is able to accurately gauge this social acceptance bias. We won't know, I guess, until the ballots are cast.
Well, again, I think this is the first campaign we've seen in modern times where the entire establishment and their mouthpieces or the mainstream media are rooting so overtly for one candidate over the other. I mean, it's not, they don't even attempt to hide it anymore. I mean, it's the mainstream media has always been biased, but in this case, it is so over the top. I mean, we've never seen anything like this when Joy Behar on The View gets on there and just, you know, starts calling all the women that accused Bill Clinton of raping them tramps, and she's supposed to be a feminist. And then the other day she came out and said Donald Trump should be charged with sedition. And here you had today Michael Moore came out and said that anybody that votes for Donald Trump, all the voters are terrorists. That's what he called them. And this, we've already been called deplorables before that, so now we're terrorists. So this is, when you said there's a social factor there, I think there are a lot of people that are afraid to say that. I said the reason most people don't put Trump signs and support him on their yard is because they're afraid of vandalism or perhaps real terrorism.
Don Jeffries is with us. Don Jeffries, the author of Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics, with a foreword by Roger Stone. This is the paperback edition. You talk about voter fraud in the book. And now, of course, a lot of this is being, you know, discussed openly. There seemed to have been almost this tacit agreement before that it was agreed by both parties that this sort of thing would go on behind, you know, backstage. But and there was this tacit agreement, perhaps, that, you know, we won't talk about it out on the main stage. Of course, Donald Trump doesn't play by those rules. But just give us kind of a history of going back several election cycles, perhaps to 1960, the one we're most familiar with, and examples of voter fraud.
Well, I like it in my lifetime, and you don't really even have to go back that far just for people to remember. I mean, anyone who supported Ron Paul in 2012, again, we saw the familiar thing where he had tremendous campaign rallies. I mean, it's overflowing crowds everywhere, enthusiastic support, signs, bumper stickers, and yet, I wrote an article about it on my blog, the things that happened to his campaign, that it's unbelievable. I urge everyone to go to my blog and read the article I wrote recently on rocking the voter fraud. It goes over a lot of this. And the same thing happened to Pat Buchanan back in 1996 when he won the New Hampshire primary, talking about a lot of the same things Donald Trump's talking about. And it just shocked the establishment. And instead of being anointed the front runner, which is what usually happens when you win the New Hampshire primary, the media went into overdrive and the entire Republican establishment, much as they would do with Trump this year, completely repudiated him and said he can't be the nominee. And that doesn't happen to any of their other candidates. It just doesn't. If someone wins the, you know, New Hampshire, if it's an outsider, a surprise like a Dukakis or somebody, then instantly they're anointed the front runner and everyone kind of says, well, they can win. But in the case of Pat Buchanan and certainly Ron Paul, and you can go back to Ross Perot. We still don't know what happened to his campaign when he was leading in the supposed polls, and then he just suddenly dropped out. And I talk about that a little bit in the book, where there still has not been a logical explanation for why that happened. He got back in, but I think if he hadn't have dropped out, he would have won. And so we need to examine why he dropped out. But I talked a lot about votes, with Vote Scam. It was a book written by the Collier brothers, and it talked about the 1980s period in Dade County, Florida, which would later, of course, become more noteworthy during the 2000 campaign, the presidential campaign of Gore and Bush.
Right, and Gore did not concede until the next day and then challenged it all the way to the Supreme Court, and he had a seconder by the name of Bill Clinton. So, yeah, there is some hypocrisy there in terms of, you know, people calling out Donald Trump because he's saying, well, I'm going to wait and see before I concede, because there is a history.
Absolutely. And then anyone who can read most of Vote Scam online for free. I mean, I have a good synopsis of it in Hidden History. But the Collier brothers, you know, they proved conclusively, and they investigated the Voter News Service, which is a private corporation that people don't even know about. It's very shadowy. It's never been, much like the Federal Reserve, never been audited. And all the election results go through this outfit, which no one knows almost anything about. It was put together by both major political parties and all the top mainstream media organizations. No one knows anything about it, and this is how our votes are being processed. And again, this is when somebody like Trump comes up, assuming he's real, there's still a part of me that believes that, you know, this may all be some kind of giant psyop. It wouldn't shock me.
Just hold on to that thought. We'll take a time out. We'll come back with Don Jeffries, The Hidden History of America. Me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Paul Simon taking us into the break right here on Coast to Coast AM. That is my absolute favorite Beatles song, And Your Bird Can Sing. Hard to believe that was recorded a half century ago. That's from the Revolver album, 1966. Impossible. Absolutely impossible. There's no way. Listen to those harmonies. Listen to that bass line. 50 years ago? You have to be kidding me. We are talking conspiracies with Don Jeffries. We'll get back to that conversation in a moment. But it's interesting to note that the term conspiracy theorist is in itself a conspiracy. That's right. The CIA actually coined the term conspiracy theorist in a 1967 dispatch as a means of attacking anyone who challenged the official narrative, specifically the official narrative of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, as was laid out in the Warren Report. Again, April 1967, the CIA wrote a dispatch which coined the term conspiracy theorist and conspiracy theories, and then went on to recommend methods for discrediting those theories. And the dispatch was marked PSYCH, short for psychological operations or disinformation, and CS for the CIA's clandestine services unit. And, this is not a hoax or a rumor or a legend. This dispatch was actually produced in response to a Freedom of Information Act request by the New York Times, no less, back in 1976. Go online and read it for yourself. Hey, in honor of the fast approaching Halloween season, we've collected all 13 editions of our legendary Ghost to Ghost specials from the Coast to Coast Archive and put them together in one place. Coast Insiders can listen to each and every one of these annual spooktaculars that showcase spine-tingling stories and hauntings and ghost encounters. So if you're not a Ghost Insider yet, you can sign up at the website coasttocoastam.com and immediately dive into this enormous collection of incredible tales. All right. Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. Don Jeffries on the other side, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio, AM 640. Donald Jeffries, the author of Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. The new paperback edition now available with a foreword by Roger Stone. Before the break, Don, you were sort of positing, still holding out the possibility that Donald J. Trump might in fact be, I don't know if I would use the term imposter, but what did you have in mind exactly? What do you think, what role may he be playing in this election?
As a conspiracy theorist, so if I actually wanted to theorize, which I don't really do that very much at all, one could easily look at this, okay, because of the buffoonish nature of his personality, even though he's bringing up some really important issues in between, you know, his kind of ridiculous statements, and he's being cast as a so-called conspiracy theorist. He's being cast and portrayed this way by the establishment. So it could be that this might turn off the whole political world to anybody who's even going to stray into those waters if it goes badly for him. I mean, like I said, I believe he's probably ahead, and certainly if he just had a more stable personality, a different type of personality, and was a little more articulate, and wasn't quite so egotistical, I think he would be winning in a landslide, and they couldn't deny it, because the issues he's talking about are something that cannot even be argued, and his opponent is just the queen of corruption, and the fact that the mainstream media just manages to ignore leak after leak, whether it's from WikiLeaks or now Project Veritas, that are just devastating, assaults on our senses to see what is going on here. I mean, how many times did we hear the media blast Trump himself and his supporters for the violence that was happening at their rallies, which were all from anti-Trump forces. And now we have documentation that they were paid. People were being paid to disrupt and commit violence. And I don't hear any apologies from anyone. And this is, more people are becoming aware of this. And if anything else, no matter what happens, even if Hillary Clinton is elected, I think that the system has been irreparably damaged. And especially young people are never going to trust any part of it again.
Well, that's what I was alluding to earlier, Don, whether the damage and the erosion of a trust in institutions, notably the Fourth Estate. I mentioned that quote. We've often heard it. 95% of Americans, I would say North Americans, I'm sitting up here in Canada, 95% of North Americans have lost faith. They don't believe the mainstream media. And now, of course, we also have accusations about collusion between the State Department, the Department of Justice, the pillars of the judicial system, even the Supreme Court. Trump has made remarks about certain justices on the Supreme Court. The danger here is that there's this idea of the noble lie, that the reason that we have to, sort of lie to the public and shoot down some of these so-called conspiracy theories is because of maybe there is some truth to them, but the irreparable harm it will do to the social fabric.
Right. No, I understand that, but the problem is, at this point, things have gotten so far. I mean, when you have a situation where courageous individuals like Julian Assange just revealed the most damning information about our leaders, and our mainstream media, supposedly the Fourth Estate, that is supposed to be looking out for, or at least telling the truth, their only concern was who leaked the information, not what the information was. And this is the mindset we have now, and it goes back to Bradley Manning, who's sitting in a long prison sentence for revealing things that no one wanted to hear about the military.
And, over 800 days. Over 800 days he's sitting in
yeah.
prison without a trial.
And Edward Snowden, who's in exile, again, whose crime was to reveal that the NSA was spying on Americans. We live in a culture now, and you see it in business, you see it in government, everywhere, where the whistleblowers are not only not wanted, they are punished and targeted. And the wrongdoing is not, there's apparently no big deal to those in charge. And of course that, whether it's, rogue cops or whatever, when the police departments don't punish them, or, and anywhere else in our society, when bullies aren't punished in school or whatever, it's an inescapable conclusion that it's all rotten at the top. And for whatever reason, the system continues to protect those it should be punishing and punish those it should be lauding. And be considered heroes. And this is what we have with Julian Assange. And I just was reading tonight, looking on my conspiracy forums, I'm not going to get on the mainstream media, that apparently Julian Assange's right-hand man, Gavin McKinnon, I don't have his name right, but has apparently just suddenly died. And, he was 76 years old, but it was sudden. And this is what we're faced with, the body count that can be connected in some way to the Clintons during this campaign alone. It's just mind-boggling.
These are allegations and there's a lot of speculation here, but you're right. I mean, when you sit and think about how many people do you know that have been murdered, maybe one, maybe probably none. But when you look at the number of people that have some sort of connection to the Clintons, and again, this is speculation and allegations. This is what's out there. I'm not saying one way or the other. This is the talk that's out there. It is fascinating. But you mentioned Julian Assange, and there is also the theory out there that he too is some sort of either a useful fool or a plant. He's being used by one side or the other. And then, of course, the charges that he's doing the Russians' bidding, and now Putin sort of playing the Boris Badenoff from Rocky and the Bullwinkle and the Flying Squirrel. I mean, it's the stuff of a Hollywood blockbuster film. But what about Assange? Is it possible he's some sort of a plant?
Well, a lot of people in the conspiracy world think that. But what happens is the thinking in the conspiracy world, a lot of them think that about Alex Jones. The high-profile figures, a lot of them think that about Snowden. And, you know, I try to accept everybody in face value. I understand you mentioned this, the 1967 memo from the CIA, Countering Criticism of the Warren Report. We know, and I wrote in Hidden History about the backgrounds of the CIA affiliations of Gloria Steinem and Timothy Leary, people, counterculture figures, so-called, like that, and the fact that the intelligence agency has always infiltrated both the far left, from the Black Panthers to the far right and the KKK. They've been doing it for decades. So there are disinfo agents out there everywhere, but I think it'd be pretty hard to prove that. So I try to take everyone out. So on face value, Julian Assange appears to be doing something quite noble, and I believe he hasn't been heard from for days now. So a lot of people think that something happened to him as well. And we live in interesting times, frightening times, but the corruption is being revealed and peeled back layer by layer, and I think the people who have profited from it for so long, and this is just a way of doing business to them, that they don't know what to do, because it is being exposed, and they can't control things like, or haven't been able to control things like WikiLeaks. They can't control the internet. They can't control a guy like Project Veritas, James O'Keefe, who is going undercover and catching them on videotape, and admitting these horrendous things. And they sound like conspiracy theorists when they just say, it was taken out of context, or was like, and they're the ones that sound like conspiracy theorists, because we can look at the video ourselves and we can see what they're saying. And they're admitting to paying people to disrupt Trump's campaigns and so forth, rallies and so forth. So, but media is not the least bit concerned at all. And again, they're revealing, that's why, as you mentioned, they have less than 10% credibility. They're rivaling Congress.
Right, and it is very discouraging when, again, they will dismiss someone like James O'Keefe and they will smear him. Well, he's a convicted felon. Well, he's convicted because he was, on the job as an investigative reporter, doing what an investigative reporter should do, and he went into a congressman's office wearing a hard hat and a vest, pretending to be a telephone repairman to verify whether, in fact, this particular congresswoman's phone lines were down, as she said, or whether she was hiding from her constituents, and that's what he was charged with. But that's not, that's hardly.
Yeah, you're right. He's doing what the professional journalists won't do. And you can go back to, if you watch the old Superman show or read the old comics, you can see Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen. They used to do that all the time. They would go undercover to try to infiltrate, to try to find out inside information. And that's used to be a tradition in the press. Now they get convicted of it. It depends on what kind of information you're. If you can get the important enough information, then obviously you're going to be punished again by the people. And the conclusion is inescapable. It's not a conspiracy theory to say that the system is run on corruption. It's like a lifeblood to it. And if the corruption is all excised like a cancer, I don't know what would be left at this point. Hopefully something newer would emerge, but the establishment is teetering. They're like a fighter that has wobbly knees and has been knocked down several times in the 15th round, and they're trying to hold on to the bell. And they may be able to do it. But, again, especially if Hillary Clinton gets in office, because no matter what she says about the TPP or anything else, she has a track record going back decades. Everybody knows exactly what she's going to do. She's going to continue the disastrous policies that have sold America out, that have killed our infrastructure, that have killed our industry, that if she's going to open the borders even more. She wants more foreign visa workers in to compete with Americans when there's 100 million Americans out of work, despite their absurd 5% unemployment rate that I guess is common core math. You do the math there. I don't know how 100 million Americans of adult working age equals to 5% unemployment, but this is what we're being sold, and the mainstream media is parroting that with big smiles on their faces, and it's just not working anymore, because more and more people can get alternative information on the internet and talk shows like this. They can read books like mine, and there is no argument when they read the actual evidence and see what people like us are saying, as opposed to what the talking heads on television are saying, or what very challenged politicians are saying, the empty rhetoric there, it comes up empty. And they're going to choose what we're saying every time, because what we're saying makes sense. It certainly in terms of what they experience in their own lives.
Many in the so-called alternative press, and I don't think that term applies anymore. I think we have to flip it around. I mean, I think the mainstream media, what we refer to as the Fourth Estate, has now, they are so sort of far off from the main, they are now, they're the fringe.
They are, and people, I think Alex Jones and others like to point this out all the time, but I believe your show, I think, gets millions of listeners every night. Mm-hmm. And you look at a Rachel Maddow or Chris Matthews on MSNBC, they may get 250,000 viewers every night.
Well, people are voting with their feet.
Right.
And newspapers all over the world are in trouble because they're not reporting what people want to hear about.
Right.
Don Jeffries is with us. Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. And we will open up the phone lines, questions and comments, after the top of the hour. And I mentioned sort of the alternative press, whether it's Breitbart or Alex Jones and this program and others. They've sort of characterized this election. It's no longer Republicans and Democrats. The lie of the two-party system has sort of been laid to waste, and now it's an election characterized as the nationalists versus the globalists. Would you agree with that characterization?
Absolutely, and even if Trump, you know, there are some analogies too. If you saw the great 1941 movie Meet John Doe, one of Frank Capra's greatest, where Gary Cooper plays he doesn't have a personality like Trump. But it's the same kind of thing where he plays a populist character and he comes to believe, he actually is hired for the role, but he comes to believe in it. And I don't know that Trump has come to believe in it, but right now he's a symbolic candidate to me. I don't care, like I said, a lot of times he infuriates me, you know, the way he presents himself, but he's a gigantic, he represents a symbolic, gigantic middle finger to the establishment and basically a thumbs down. On what we've been experiencing for decades, and he's the only kind of outsider we could ever get. The system is locked out against average people, so the only thing the only kind of outsider we're ever going to get is a rogue, loose cannon billionaire type like a Perot before and a Trump that had any chance, because Trump was a celebrity, the media couldn't ignore them, and he also went in their circles for years. So I don't think they thought he had all this in him either.
I look at Trump and I view him as the embodiment of Newton's third law. He is the equal and opposite reaction to everything that has come down the pipe in terms of what we've been fed by the mainstream media, what we've been fed by political elites for the last 50 years. So he is the antithesis of that, and it's sometimes not pretty. It's also like, you know, when you make pancakes in the morning, that first one or two off the grill are misshapen and ugly, and it's only till you get the third or fourth one do you actually perfect it. So, you know, maybe the next one after Trump will be a little more palatable.
Well, I think I think if Trump does, and again, a part of me, it's hard to believe that you know, maybe he isn't legitimate. I don't know, but at this point, and I've lost lots of friends just by saying positive things about it, but I keep trying to say that he's more, it's a symbolic gesture. It's an attempt to, at least what looks like, defeat the establishment and give a big thumbs down to them. Because we can't, I don't know how any average American, any working class or poor American, can possibly approve of the way this country has been run for a very long time. Now, certainly the 1% can approve of it, and Trump comes from the 1%, so everybody say, well, you know, how can he be? And it's maybe he is. Maybe this is all phony, but the issues he's raising are real, and if somehow he got in office and he didn't keep those promises, which maybe he wouldn't, then again, maybe this movement and certainly all the Bernie Sanders people out there, because there's a lot of overlap there. That's why I thought if somehow they could have come together somehow, because they agreed on as much as they disagreed on, but just couldn't make it happen with the social issues and so forth. But there's a lot of brewing discontent, you know, that's what built the Bernie Sanders campaign. And there's going to be a better candidate that's going to come along. It's going to be a much better candidate than Trump and a more sincere candidate than Sanders, unfortunately, because you see what happened. He just kind of put his tail between his leg and walked away instead of, he should have mentioned the friend. That's the problem that Pat Buchanan had in 96 and Ron Paul had in 2012. They didn't mention the voting fraud that was obvious at all.
Right, he sort of rolled over, Bernie Sanders did, the same way that John Kerry did in 2004 after he lost Ohio.
Right, exactly, but then that's what makes Trump different, and now they're trying to cast him as a poor sport. And they're trying to, I mean, that's why I wrote what I wrote on my blog about voting fraud. We have a long history of voting fraud, and certainly in the
From both sides.
From both sides, yeah. This is because I've been accused. Oh, you think I'm no Republican. I've never voted Republican in my life, and I don't think Trumpkin is a Republican. I think he picked the Republican Party because the Democratic Party, with the superdelegates, it was impossible, as Bernie Sanders found out. it was impossible for an outsider to break through, because that's what happened. He kept, I mean, at one point he had won 8 straight primaries, and the mainstream media kept up the mantra, when is he going to drop out? I mean, it's unheard of. And so it was, and but because of the superdelegates, she kept picking up delegates in the Republican Party. He kept winning, and they didn't have the superdelegates, so the majority had to go with him. And I think he knew enough, or his people knew enough, that this was the party where you had a better chance for an outsider to break through. And you may see afterwards, as the establishment really closes ranks, you may see something like that superdelegate process in the Republican Party as well, to ensure that there's not any other Trump.
Yes, I'm on side with that 100%. We will take a time out, come back, and continue to discuss America's hidden history, voter fraud, and much more with Don Jeffries.